everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. We're back for November of 2017. We are on our monthly off-season schedule. This is episode number 110, and I am Michael Citrup, Mainland.com, the founder and managing editor. Joining me is our illustrious writer, David Rowe. Dave, how are you?
I'm feeling out of practice. It's been so long since we've talked.
Yes, except for on Slack. We have not talked a whole lot. And, you know, it's
stuff. They don't know that.
Yeah, well, you know, we typed. We didn't really talk.
Yeah, we didn't really talk.
Although Slack does have this cool little call feature we have never used, but we could. Anyway, it's been a while since we've last talked to our listening audience in episode 109 when we wrapped up the season. We did a little bit of a stays or goes with the entire roster. We'll talk a little bit about that because we got a little early gift from the club this year. They didn't wait till the day before Thanksgiving to to send out the notices of whose contracts have been renewed and options have been picked up and declined and all that. We already have that information, so we'll keep score. We'll do a little scorecard on that. We'll talk a little bit about the Puerto Rico friendly. We'll talk a little bit about Alex Morgan and what she's been doing with the U.S. Women's National Team season-ending home-and-home series with rival Canada. And we'll talk about a little bit about the W League because we've got somebody tearing it up down there from the Orlando Pride. And we're also going to we'll talk a little bit about men's national team. They played their final game of 2017. We'll talk a little bit about the MLS final. So there's a lot going on, lots to talk about, and so we can get right into that. We are going to talk about Dave. We played a game since you and I last talked, or Orlando City played a game. I have played some games, but not any soccer games.
I've played some soccer games, but I don't think FIFA counts.
Yeah, I'm not talking video games. I've played, you know, like actually, I've played like some. I have this stupid addiction to Panda Pop on my phone. I don't know if you're familiar with this game, but it's.
I am definitely not.
Yeah, you're basically
that.
Just trying to pop the same color bubbles and save the baby pandas that. For some reason, a baboon has kidnapped the baby pandas, and your job is to set them all free. And sorry, this is really boring to our listeners.
Wait, but you know, it makes as much sense as Donkey Kong does.
Yeah, kinda. And you know, it's just screen after screen of you know different obstacles and that kind of thing. It's basically a more boring version of Donkey Kong, really.
What you're saying is that you're a baller.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's what I'm saying, but I'm saying something.
I figure it was better than a bubble popper.
Well, you got to pop those bubbles, you know.
Okay.
You got to do it. It's got to be done. All right. So the end of the season, Orlando City played a little fundraising friendly against the Puerto Rican national team. It was the last appearance for Kaká in a purple jersey for the Lions. And our Scott Carnival went out to that. I couldn't go to that game. I had some stuff going on, so I was not happy because I really wanted to check it out because, you know, one more time to see Kaká kick it around. And it was a bit sloppy, as you might imagine. It was a kind of a weird roster for the friendly. There was only one goalkeeper. There wasn't even a backup goalkeeper. Earl Edwards Jr. took his place between the pipes and between the sticks, as they say. There was nobody else to back him up. Mason Stajahar got hurt again, Dave.
Again.
Yeah, I think it's an ankle this time. So, Mason, can you just wrap yourself in bubble wrap when you come off the field, and let's not get you hurt anymore. back line was like Kevin Alston, Tommy Redding, Jonathan Spector, and Donnie Toya. So a little mixed bag there. Kevin Alston has not played with the first team. The midfield had Antonio Nocerino, Will Johnson, Richie Larea, Kaká, played up top with Dom Dwyer. It was a PC played in the game as an attacking midfielder. It was kind of a crazy lineup Jason Christ sent out there. But it was, you know, as you can
an effective one.
As you can imagine. It took those guys a little bit of time to settle into the game, a little bit sloppy, some giveaways. Puerto Rico actually scored early And of course, everybody was like, "Come on," because they had that drubbing at the hands of the Philadelphia Union still in mind when that happened. And so things weren't looking good. But it was kind of a butt kicking in the end. It was a 6-1 win.
But yeah,
the last two wins, I think, of the season were both 6-1 against the Revolution and against Puerto. And also our last loss of the season was 6-1, I think. So it was kind of crazy. 6-1 games should not be this common.
No, it shouldn't be a theme.
So, Dom Dwyer tied the game at 20 minutes or so after the first goal, which came pretty early in the game, to make it 1-1. So it was 1-1 at the break. I think it was tied at one at halftime. So it was kind of like, you're looking at this thing going, okay. My timeline didn't know what to make of it, 'cause I was checking the social media and they were not sure what should be happening, because it's Puerto Rico, but it's a national team. Should we be beating them with this lineup? Who knows? but anyway, Kyle Aaron made it 2-1 early in the second half. And from there, it was just it was pretty much over. I mean,
yeah, they started reining them in at that point. Yeah,
yeah. Kaká came off in the 64th minute. He got his curtain call. Tony Rocha came on for him. So there's your trivia question: who replaced Kaká in his last game for Orlando City? Even though it wasn't the last competitive game, it was just a friendly. But 8,000 plus for that game, Dave. Not bad, considering all of the funds from the match go directly to the hurricane relief for Puerto Rico. So great cause. And, 8,000 for a friendly after the way the season ended is probably, something to tip your cap to the club about, and thank the fans for coming out for that. 'Cause there was a lot of people that could not wait for the season to be over. And, it was good to see that, they were able to get a decent sized crowd for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, I mean, all for an excellent cause. It was really good that, the management made that happen. I know that there was Puerto Rican players that were just so happy to be up and, as crass as it may sound, to be able to train on a field again. Mm-hmm. Because of course the conditions in Puerto Rico are devastating. So it was good for them. And they also, commented on how grateful they were of the fans and the Orlando City, soccer club doing this. Mm-hmm. to make that concrete gesture of, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to play this game, and by the way, here's money from it. Mm-hmm. So that is so important, and that's one of the things that I know you'll agree that this club does have a good sense of community, and that community extends to the Puerto Rican community, which is certainly, I mean, hey, we're in Florida. There's plenty of Puerto Rican, descendants or immigrants that are in the state. So, well done on everybody's part in that. The outcome of the game obviously didn't matter. It was a friendly, but the real purpose behind it was that charity.
Yeah, and we're not even done through our recap yet. We have we have some more to go. So in the 69th minute, nice touch from the club, a moment of silence to honor Joseph Campo, a longtime Orlando City supporter, a capo for the ruckus, leading the cheers, and he's a guy who used to wear a purple Deadpool mask.
Purple Deadpool.
And that's kind of how he was known, as Purple Deadpool. He had a Deadpool jersey, number 69. And so the 69th minute was a moment of silence for him. He was taken from us tragically in an automobile accident on his way to work. So, very sad story. Glad that the club, was able to honor him, and glad that Haji Berry was able to honor him with a goal in that same minute to make it 3-1. The Lions scored in the 59th, the 69th, and you would you believe, Dave, the 79th minute as well. Zeb Hines getting on the score sheet he was able to get one of his patented headers in the net. So
good for Seb.
Seb gets it in the net at 79. Laren completes his brace in the 90th. Final score 6-1. A good time was had by all.
Everyone, it seemed at one at some point that, you know, you get a goal and you get a goal and you get a goal. And it was, you know, Oprah was on the sidelines and they were just reining them in.
And Kaká did not get a goal in his final appearance.
Except for Kaká.
But he did set up Dom Dwyer's goal. So he's got that going for him, which is nice.
Which is nice. Yeah.
So a good way to end the season, a feel-good story on multiple levels. We have seen the last of Ricardo Kaká in an Orlando City uniform, unless something crazy happens at some point. So good.
That would be really crazy. Yeah.
I mean, he could be back with the club in some capacity in the future, in the front office maybe, or even, you know, as a consultant, and maybe he's going to scout Brazil for us or something at some point. There's definitely not any burnt bridges between the club and the first ever designated player. So I would not be surprised if he's serving the club in some capacity in the future.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. I just meant that he won't be lacing up the cleats and putting foot to ball during an actual game.
Obrigado, Captain. Thank you for your service, Kaká. We appreciate it. It was fun to watch him for 3 years.
Heck yeah.
All right. So, Dave, we mentioned at the top of the show, the club has not kept us in suspense until Thanksgiving Eve, late afternoon, with the news dump trying to get that in under the radar. They have posted the contract renewals and those declined for next year, those who are out of contract. Leo Pereira's loan terminated at the end of the regular season. He went back to Brazil. I actually had us keeping him because I'm an idiot.
Yes, you did.
But, you know, he's young and he's got potential.
I did not.
No, you did not. In fact, we'll talk a little bit more about it in a little bit. But, in fact, we were very, very close, and I had 23 correct guesses and 8 incorrect guesses. You had 22 correct guesses and 9 incorrect guesses. So, but a lot of the ones that we did, we both agreed on. So there weren't very many that we disagreed on. And the ones that we disagreed on, I just got one more of those right, basically.
Well, and some of those we still might end up
true,
being right.
That's
on.
True. Yeah, and the one thing that always you have to remember is that some of the players let go could have been let go for contract reasons and could be re-signed. Some of the players who were kept on may be on their way out later. If the price is right, if they get the right deal, they could be trade bait. They could bring in draft picks. They could bring in allocation money. They could maybe intentionally be left unprotected for the LAFC expansion draft in order to protect other players that they don't want to lose. So there's a lot still in play. So I will say right now, as we stand, I'm 23-8 and you're 22-9, but that could change. We will do the final tally when we have our opening day roster, I think.
Well, you know, I don't want to toot our horn too much, but that's pretty good. I think we did a pretty good job there. I mean, you know.
I mean, there were some free spaces, obviously. Like,
okay, fine. Kaká
was
a free
space.
Space.
Spectre, Bendik. Sutter, Bendik, Yoshi Otoon. There were a few of those. And some the other way. Devron Garcia, you know, guys like that.
Right.
Anyway.
Everybody should go back and listen to the previous podcast where we went on way too long about this.
Yes,
but, yeah, go listen to that and then listen to this.
If you have 3 weeks to spend to just kill, listen to that podcast because it's about 3 weeks long.
And we know that because we did that today.
We just listened to just that section of the podcast. And
we are now older than everybody else by 3 weeks.
I just want to take this opportunity to apologize to our listeners of episode number 109 of the Mainland Podcast. Oh, okay. Let's not make that mistake. And let's move along and let's be crisp. The roster moves, Dave, are as follows. The club, as you know, obviously Pereira's spell ended. His loan spell ended. Went back to Paranaense. The contract options of first-team regulars Antonio Nocerino, Servando Carrasco, Dylan Powers, and Giles Barnes were not exercised by the club. Additionally, Seb Hines and Haji Berry also did not have their options exercised. Josh Saunders did not have his backup goalkeeper did not have his option exercised, and defender Connor Donovan, who spent the whole year at OCB and basically has been in OCB for 2 years after suffering a knee injury in 2015 in his very first MLS game. Contracts of defenders Kevin Alston and Devron Garcia and midfielder Kaká expired and were not extended. The club did exercise the options on the following: goalkeeper Earl Edwards Jr., defenders Rafael Ramos and Tommy Redding, midfielders Christian Higuita and Tony Rocha, forwards Dom Dwyer, Kyle Larin, and Carlos Rivas, and all of the other players were already still under contract, did not need to be renewed or options or anything. And that's Joe Bendick, Mason Stajahar, Scott Sutter, Jonathan Spector, Jose Aja, Donnie Toya, PC, Will Johnson, Yoshimaru Yotun, Richie Larea, Pierre Da Silva. So that's, first of all, let me just say, I don't want to get too much into our stats because that's a little bit too far up our own rear ends. but I do want to ask you, who were the biggest surprises for you?
Okay, so I would have to say, just looking back at where we were wrong, because I think that's the bigger thing, is, you know, where we were going to be wrong. I think it was Aja.
And yes.
Yeah, that would be one of the big ones that I would say that we were wrong and surprised me. And then Rivas.
Yeah, I think Rivas was a big surprise for me too. You know, it because it wasn't just that they were kept, it's that they were their you know, the options were exercised for
right,
at least for, you know, for Rivas. Aja was already under contract. I guess his contract was a multi-year deal. But the thing that I look back on now, thinking back on this, is that these are players that, again, could be on the move this offseason. It doesn't make – I will stand by my statement of the last show of saying it just makes no sense to spend a designated player's spot on a guy like Carlos Rivas,
right,
when, you know, you clearly want to go for guys that are more like Yoshimaru Yotun.
Yeah, let's not anybody think that when I say that I'm thinking that we're eventually going to be wrong.
Right. I mean, we'll see. Of course,
we'll see. We could still be wrong.
I think the biggest surprise for me is Haji Berry not being picked up. As he's a young guy, he can find the net. He's lightning quick. He's raw. He's still very, very raw, but I was surprised at his price tag and you know, youth and speed and the fact that he can score goals and was OCB's leading goal scorer by far and probably could have been in contention for the Golden Boot had he spent the entire year at OCB. I'm a little surprised that he was let go.
Well, and that brings up the question, because we both said that he was going to stay, but we both also said that it was going to be that if he'd stayed, it was going to be in a OCB or whatever the going forward equivalent of that is going to be.
Correct.
So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to wait and find out. But yeah, no, I'm with you, because, I mean, obviously that was one that we both said would stay, and he is not. Yeah. So.
I mean, and he's a guy who would not – you would not have an – a difficult time, I don't think, loaning him to the NASL or USL. I think that it would be easy to find him a spot to play where he could develop, and you wouldn't even have to worry about him. And I'm a little bit surprised that Tony Rocha's back. But again, he could be just taking up a spot that they can leave unprotected for LAFC, that kind of thing. So we don't know how it's all going to play out, but I don't think there were too many huge surprises, you know, just some mild raising of the eyebrows. I know that again, people think that if they were let go, that there was a reason that they're gone, and that's not necessarily the reason. I could easily see a Giles Barnes coming back for less money.
Yeah.
In fact, I said that, I think, in the last episode. I said that
I said
I think he's gone at the current price tag, but he could come back for less money. And I think that was one of the ones we differed on. And
it is, and you were more correct than I until he – and even if he does come back, it'll be probably be at a pay cut, which means you'll still be more correct than I. I just still have the opportunity to possibly be somewhat correct.
Correct. Yes, I think that at that point, because I wrote that down, that at the current money, no. So I think we'll both get a W if he does come back. I think we both.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We will always take a W.
Yeah. So, and that might be the difference. It might just even us all out for the year. But yeah, I again, no big surprises, nothing shocking, some mild eyebrow raising. And again, it will be more clear when, when opening day rolls around, why some of these people were either let go or why some of them stayed, because I still think we'll see some movement of guys that are on the roster. And I think we'll see potentially two, maybe even three guys re-signed. We saw that last year. So I think we could see it again this year.
Well, and of course, the biggest potential move that we both called that as of now has not happened is Kyle Larin.
Yes, it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not surprised that it hasn't happened yet because the window's not open.
Correct.
Currently, we both said that he would be gone, and he... We'll talk more later. Our special guest will indicate tonight that he's probably going to go. So at least that's what I took from this week's guest. I took from his comments that...
Spoilers!
I took from his comments that it's probably not likely that Kyle will be on the roster. And again, this is not was not said. I'm reading between the lines here.
Oh, we're definitely reading between the lines there. I mean, that's... but, anyway, you'll get to hear that later.
Exactly. All right, so... no huge surprises. We both did, I think, pretty well, and we might even do better after it all shakes out. Of course, we also could be doing slightly worse after it all shakes out, but we'll have to wait and see. We won't know until March, really.
Nope.
That's, we're playing the long game here, Dave.
We are playing the long game, and we have to because,
it's a long off season.
We're old.
Well, yeah. Well, it's a long off season. The off season is dark and full of terrors. And we've only just begun. The MLS teams are still playing, Dave.
It's the long, dark tea time of the soul.
That's right. That's right. Reminds me, I'm way behind on Dirk Gently on BBC America.
Such a great show.
I'm four episodes back now.
You got to catch up. Such a great show.
I do. Okay, so Dave, the next thing I want to talk about is the fact that Alex Morgan is on fire.
Alex Morgan's been on fire since she got back from Lyon.
She continues to be amazing. She and her U.S. women's national team teammates took on Canada, first in Vancouver and then in San Jose, California. They went up there north of the border, got a 1-1 draw. Alex got the goal. They came back down here, and they won that one 3-1, and Alex had the game-winning goal and assisted on the insurance goal. So Alex Morgan on fire. And Jill Ellis still hates Ashlyn Harris.
Yeah, what is up with that?
I think that Jill Ellis is just going to – she's putting Alyssa Nair through the Hope Solo program of where she's going to just grind her bones to dust, and then she'll go and pick a new goalkeeper. Listen, Jill Ellis, I know you, of course, listen to the podcast religiously.
Of course.
And I think that it's bogus that you called in not two, not three, but four goalkeepers for two games, and you played one of them all 180 minutes. You didn't play Ashlyn Harris. You certainly didn't play somebody that I think is very deserving, Adriana French from the Portland Thorns. Nobody else played.
These were friendlies.
Yeah, these were friendlies. And this was a good opportunity to get each of the four a good solid half of a game.
Exactly. You had four halves. You had four goalies. It's easy to do the math.
Meanwhile, Alex Morgan played all of both games and did so quite well.
Well, with two goals and an assist, it's kind of hard to argue with that.
Not bad. Alex is up to 80 international career goals. She's only, Dave, 104 behind Abby Wambach.
Yeah, isn't she only like 123 caps in? I think I wrote that the other day. I can't remember the exact number.
I looked at that, and I looked at the goals, and I said, man, Alex is how old? She's not catching Abby. Abby's just way out there. Right. But, you know, Alex has had much more injury-plagued career with the U.S. and with her club teams than Abby did in the, you know, throughout her career.
I don't know. If she keeps up the current pace, she might catch her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alex is she's unbelievable right now. She's really, really playing well. And I thought the team looked interesting. Of course, not everybody was there. Rose Lavelle was not there. Mallory Pugh was not there. Unfortunately, Jill, of course, hates the Pride. She didn't play Chioma Obogugu either after getting her first call-up. She did not get her first cap. I thought that was kind of rude. Maybe throw her in the last 10 minutes at some point. I thought that would have been good.
Yeah, especially, I mean, the game's well in hand. You know, let Alex have a seat.
Yeah, and she, again, Kelly O'Hara played a ton in those two games. So she's somebody that could have got a rest. But it is what it is. Three Pride players went, one played, one dominated, and, you know, if you want to better results, Jill, you know, play more Pride players.
Oh, it's quite obvious.
Speaking of Pride players, Dave, I got to give a big shout-out to Rachel Hill. Rachel went down under to the W League to play for the Perth Glory on loan this offseason, and in her first ever W League game, all she did was score two goals and assist on another. And in her second W League game, all she did was score a hat trick. And in her third W League game, she didn't technically score the goal, but she crossed the ball into the box that was knocked in for an own goal. So Rachel Hill basically could be elected Queen of Australia.
Oh, they're loving her. And it's Canberra, right?
Perth Glory, my friend.
Oh, Perth Glory. Excuse me. They are loving her in Perth.
Yes, you are confusing with Tony. Yeah, Tony Pressley.
Tony Pressley, yeah. Who also recently had a goal.
She scored her first W League goal of the season. in the last weekend. So congratulations to them. Also been hearing, haven't gotten to see any of their games, but I've been following on social media, and it's a lot of really great things being said about Steph Catley so far this year. And of course, that's no surprise either. Steph Catley and Alana Kennedy both playing for Melbourne City.
That sounds right. And I'm absolutely certain that we named Rachel, both named Rachel the best newcomer for the Pride.
Well, yeah, it was a no-brainer, really.
It was a no-brainer, but I'm just saying that I'm pointing out that once again.
We're right. You're trying to toot our own horn a little more. You're trying to get in on
you
that.
You know what? It's the off season. We got to do it now.
Okay, yeah, whatever. I mean, it is the off season, and
okay, granted, it was a no-brainer.
Get your yucks out however you can, Dave. Okay, so go Rachel Hill, and you know, continue to make us proud, and if you know, the cool thing was it made things a lot easier for her, of course, being on a forward line with Samantha Kerr. Kerr is her teammate at Perth, and the two of them are both up top in a 4-3-3 that they've been playing. And I never thought I'd be able to tell you a W League team's shape, but I am able to do that because I've been following the Perth Glory. They have an excellent Twitter feed and a pretty good website, so I've been able to follow them quite well.
And if you put Kerr and Hill at the top, then you know. Yeah, we're going to follow that.
Absolutely. And Kerr did not play in the third match in which Rachel did not score, except she caused an own goal. But that was the first loss of the season for Perth. So probably not a shock that Sam Kerr misses the game and the team loses. But Rachel's doing really great things. And if she can come back to the NWSL next year and just continue this form the way Alex did coming back from Lyon, I mean, that's just going to be unbelievable. It's going to really give Tom Sermani even more offense. You know, he already had the league's best offense, and he could have an even better
one.
Yeah, and then all he has to do is, you know, shore up the D a little bit and get a little bit more physical, and this team could very well be challenging for their first ever cup. So that'd be really exciting to see next year.
No doubt. Well, I mean, heck, they already made the playoffs last year. Why not?
All right. Well, we're going to get in a little bit into the U.S. men's national team and what they did. We're going to get into a little bit of MLS final predictions as the semifinals approach this month. And we're going to do all of that in just a little bit. But first, we've got a really special guest this month joining us on the Mainland Podcast for only the second time ever and second time this calendar year. Would be head coach Jason Kreiss of Orlando City SC. He was our guest back on January 7th in our January off-season podcast, because we only do one of these a month in the off-season. And he was kind enough to come back on the show to talk about not only the season that has been, but the season to come and the off-season that is. And we'll get to Jason Kreiss's interview right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this month, we're now in our monthly schedule, obviously, is Orlando City head coach Jason Kreiss. Jason, thanks for returning to the Mainland Podcast.
Not a problem. You're very welcome. Good to be here.
So I want to jump right in. You know, obviously, the 2017 season still fresh in everybody's mind, even though you're looking ahead to next year already, obviously, and you know, the team got off to a really hot start, probably surprised a lot of people, including maybe even you. And then things kind of went a little bit south, and then they just kind of never turned around. They, you know, even when the team had good performances, just couldn't seem to get results to match those performances. I just want to get your perspective on what the season, you know, how that unfolded for you, what you thought were the big surprises, pleasantly and unpleasantly over the year, and just your general thoughts.
Yeah, obviously a very, very difficult year, I think, for all of us, emotionally. Really, really difficult, because to start out the way we did, you kind of got these visions of grandeur early on, and you really felt like things could take off. Although from a coach's point of view, I think that we were probably a little bit more feet in our ground than most, because even though we were getting wins, it felt like some of those wins were a little bit fortunate. And that we weren't really dictating the play. We were reactionary in a lot of those games, and I think a little bit fortunate to not concede goals. And then somewhere along the way, the wheels fell off a little bit, but the performances I thought were still very good. The game that comes to mind was the Toronto away game. Mm-hmm. When we're there and we're playing very, very well, and Kyle has two chances, literally, I mean, easy chances to score in the second half that completely changes that game. If he takes one, we draw, and if he takes two, we win 3-2, and I think we continue to fly. But from there, we went and had to travel to Houston directly from Toronto, and then you're battling fatigue and moods, and I think that we just weren't up for that game. And I think really from that moment, I think we kind of were second guessing ourselves for the majority of the year, and just couldn't quite put things together. From my point of view, there was a stretch in the summer where we actually started to play really, really well. But for one reason or another, just couldn't buy the little bit of luck that would give us the result that I felt we deserved. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, now you've got a kind of a collective anxiety about how you're playing. You've got a collective sort of lack of confidence about whether or not you can keep the ball out of your net and whether or not you can score enough goals to win games. And so I just don't feel like we ever really strung much together from there. I feel like late in the season, there was a little bit of a stretch where I felt like things might come together. We got the win at DC, and then a really, really good performance and good result when we got the draw away at Atlanta after they had beaten everybody about 14-0. Mm-hmm. And so felt like we garnered a little bit of confidence there, but again, slipped up at the end of the season. And then, you know, the last couple of games for me were really, really disappointing. But I know that it's difficult for the players once they know that the window of the playoffs is gone. It's difficult to get them to concentrate and stay focused and give everything that they can in the game. So really crazy year, and so many things I think added up to our not getting the results that we so desperately wanted. But I would tell you my honest opinion is I think the team is better than we were in 2016. I feel that we have better players in the group. I feel that we have better players to build around for 2018, and that's what makes us feel good about what we're doing. Having said that, you know, we've got a good core group of players that I think can lead this team in a new direction for next year. But having said that, we know we've got a lot of work to do as far as scouting and recruiting players for 2018.
Well, speaking of that, which positions is your priority or priorities, going into, the off season?
I think this answer is a little bit twofold. The first part of the answer is to say that I think it's unfair to give you exact positions, because the truth of the matter is we still have people in those positions, mm-hmm. And we're still evaluating every situation. And the second part is also extremely honest to tell you that every position, we feel that we need to strengthen the team. We need to add some defenders. We feel that we need to add some midfielders, and we feel that we need to add some guys that can score the goals. And so the truth of the matter is we know that we've got a pretty big job ahead of us to find all of these positions and all of these players. But we are very, very well on our way. We've been scouting these players really for the past year, since we hired a scouting coordinator to put a lot of things in place, and have some people that have been watching players all year with a mindset that we might have to add quite a few in this offseason. So I think we're in a good place.
Jason, recently the club announced the contract status, of all the players on the roster, and some guys were let go. As always, there are some surprises with guys that are kept and some surprises with guys that are let go. What can you tell us at this time, without giving too much away, about potentially re-signing some of the guys that were with the club before and their option wasn't exercised? Because sometimes these things just result in a different contract and the player stays with the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say, is that for fans, if they take a very black-white view of players that were released and players that are capped, they may have very much the wrong opinion on what's actually going to happen in the long run. And so I would say that everybody should just be patient and not read too much into the players that were kept and the players that were let go, because some of the players that were kept could still be leaving by a trade or sale or otherwise. And some of the players that their contracts weren't picked up could still return in a new contract. And so all of that is, I think, still very much under works and a little bit under wraps.
Well, I'd like to focus on the defense for just a moment. Obviously, there was quite a few different groupings along the back line there. It seems obvious to us that Spectre, of course, was the leader of that group, and we're all assuming that we're going to get to see him again. What was it that you were trying to figure out in the different pairings back there?
Well, the truth of the matter is, I think that was a big, big part of our lack of success this year, was the fact that Spectre took a major injury. Was probably the most critical point of our season, and we built the defensive group in the off season with really one thing in mind. We knew that we had two young potentials in Redding and Aha. We felt like both of those players could step up. We weren't quite sure which one would step up. And then we built the other side with basically the mindset that we would have two more experienced guys, Spectre and Hines. At the beginning of the season, Hines took an injury that really kept him out, I think, for the majority of the season with his knee. And it took a long time for us to kind of gain the confidence, or feel like we had the confidence to put Seb in there towards the end of the season. And I think he had some decent performances. But once Spectre was out and we really didn't feel like Seb was in real consideration for us, now we're in a place where we're playing a mixture of Leo Pereira or Tommy Redding and Jose Aja. And just the truth of the matter is that when you play young central defenders, you need to be ready for some mistakes. And I think that all three of those players had some pretty massive errors for us in critical games. And like I said, when we went through that stretch where I felt like we were performing really well, it always felt like there was one error that would happen that would really break our backs. And I think a lot of that came through the fact that we didn't have a real leader in the back line once Spectre was out.
Jason, you're not, you obviously are not concerned with things like, social media opinion and things like that, but I'm sure you hear the comments, and I just want to get your perspective as a coach as to how you, you know, block out the negativity that, you sometimes hear from, you know, from fans and, the media when results are not going the way that, you'd like them to. And because you're the one that sees the plan unfolding and, has the end goal in mind, whereas everybody else is on the outside looking in and all you see is the present. How do you deal with those situations?
I don't look, to be honest. And I ask the people that are closest to me to not, if they're going to look, to not be divulging that information to me either. I think that we're in a great place in our sport, this country, where everybody cares so passionately that they're going to voice their opinions. And I think we're in an interesting place in our society where anybody can have an opinion, and that opinion can be viewed as extremely important. When in fact it's just one person's opinion based on a very short view, and so I literally think it's an unhealthy place to be if it's a coach or a manager or anybody that's really involved in our club that's having to make decisions. It's an unhealthy place to be looking at that stuff, because I think it does affect your state of mind. It does affect the way you operate, and I think that you can't put yourself in that position, because we do, as you mentioned, we do have a lot more information than everybody. We do have the inside information. We see these guys train every single day. We have a long view of what we want this club to look like. And you know, we can't be operating willy-nilly and changing our mind every week based on fans' opinions.
Well, speaking of one of those changes that you guys made during the season, bringing in Yoshimaru Yotun, I'll be honest with you, when we got that news, a lot of us basically said, who? I know you guys have been scouting him for a while, and I think we've all now seen what you saw, but how long were you looking at him? And I know it probably wasn't a difficult decision to bring him in, but were you pleased with the on-the-field product after he got here?
Yeah, Yoshi is a player. The first time I saw him play, I was doing some scouting for the U.S. Men's National Team for Copa America, and was scouting actually an opponent against Peru, and he popped up, and I just kind of was keeping tabs on the Peru team because they had a very nice Copa America in 2016. And so there was quite a few players that I liked on that team. And when I got here, I handed over a list of the players that in the 6 months that I was out, I had, you know, seen through one avenue or another and really liked. And he was actually on Orlando City's list already as a player that they had scouted and liked. And so we're working at that a long time to find a situation to get him here. I think it took longer probably than we would have liked, honestly. But I think that shows you, I think that should show everybody the type of players that we're looking for, the type of players that we will be looking to add in this off season. And frankly, the fact that people kind of say who, you know, that seems kind of funny to me, because there's so many more players in this world that are very, very good players that aren't the household names. And in fact, those are the players that we should be looking for. We should be looking for players that are looking to make a name in our league and have the hunger and desire to move their career forward based on what they do for Orlando City, not guys that have already done everything and been everything and are coming here to end their careers.
Yeah, and another one of those names was that wasn't a household name was Scott Sutter, who had a nice year for Orlando, and he played a lot of soccer because he came right out of one season and into the next. Jason, what can you tell us about this off season in terms of Orlando City's preseason? What should we expect in terms of like number of games? Are you going to any tournaments? Bringing in some international teams for friendlies, that kind of thing. What is the plan at this point?
The plan right now is we will go to Jacksonville, same as we did last year, for the first 10 days of our preseason. That gives us an opportunity to really spend a good amount of time together. I think that we are going to, you know, if all the plan comes together, I think we're going to have quite a few new faces in this team. And so it's going to be important that we do a good job of bonding with the guys and spending time with them so that they really start to understand who each other are. So it'll be 10 days in Jacksonville. I think the end of that trip will be some sort of friendly game, and then we will be looking to play another 4 or 5 games. All of those games we're looking to play in and around the Orlando area to minimize our travel. And again, with so many new players, we want them to get used to the community here, to find homes, to get themselves settled before the season starts. And I think that's an opportunity that Orlando has that a lot of other teams don't. whereby we can really spend some time in and around our own community and get our players adapted and ready for a very long season.
Well, speaking of next season, obviously, I'm sure it can be assumed that making the playoffs is a major goal. We're all on board with that. What other, stepping stone or other goals do you have within that or aside of that for the upcoming season?
Well, I would like to see the team form consistently, and that's what I'm about. For me to say we want to make the playoffs is an easy thing. Everybody says that. And I think sometimes when you throw out an objective that's so far away, you can forget all the steps along the way. And so for me, I want to see the team perform consistently well. I want to see the team develop an identity about who we want to be. I want to see the team be really, really dominant in the matches that we play at home for certain. And be looking to play the same style on the road as we do at home. And so for me, if we do those things, if we play consistent, if we're looking to be the dominant team in all the matches that we play, if we take care of business at home in front of our own fans, you do all those things and you make the playoffs, and it doesn't have to be the thing that you're talking about all the time.
Jason, the big question I think most Orlando City fans have this offseason is what is going to be done with Kaká's slot. What do you what can you tell us? What do you envision for that designated player or position?
We are actively looking for a new number 10. We are actively looking for a lot of attacking minded players, but in particular, we are looking for somebody that we can really focus our attack through. We're looking for somebody in the center of midfield who can be our protagonist, who can be our playmaker, who we want to be able to play through. And I think that's our main focus for that designated player position.
Well, that being said, of course, you've got Dom and Kyle theoretically up top, at least at the moment. We saw a little bit of that partnership start to develop. I don't think it ever had quite enough time to really do so. Is that something that we're going to continue to see as far as formation with the potential of both of them up top?
Well, I would say that when you bring Laren into the discussion, it brings up question marks because we don't know exactly how that situation is going to play out. Kyle has made it publicly clear that he would like to leave the club. And we've made it publicly clear that if the situation presents itself that is beneficial to us and to him, then we will absolutely consider that. So I would tell you that right away. That's something that I can't answer right now.
Jason, before we let you go, just want to kind of get a sense of these off-season plans that you have, your scouting plans. How much travel do you expect to be doing? Where do you think you're going to be going and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I leave tomorrow for 2 days. I'll be home for another 2 days, and I'll be gone in Europe 10 days. And I would expect after that, between now and about December 18th, I would expect that 3 out of every 4 days I'll be on the road scouting and meeting players and recruiting new ones.
Any plans to visit one of our partner clubs like you did last year?
Yes, actually, on the books right now, I'm trying to put something together for next week to spend 3 or 4 days at Benfica. And I think that should happen. We're just waiting on some final details.
All right. Thanks so much, Jason Kreis, head coach of Orlando City SC. We'll let you go and continue on your busy off season. And best of luck to you assembling your team for 2018.
Thanks, guys. Very much appreciated.
All right. Again, big thanks to Jason Kreis for being with us on the Mainland Podcast. And, some very enlightening remarks from the head coach, particularly as I mentioned early in the show, some pretty telling things about Kyle Laren if you read between the lines a little bit.
Yes, reading between the lines, it's almost like we purposely asked him things like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are expected to ask our guests, questions, and that's something on everybody's mind. We're not going to let that go.
Of course not.
Yeah,
I'd say we're professionals, but that would imply paychecks.
Yeah, I liked his answer for the what are we going to do with Kaká's slot? What are we going to do with that designated player spot? And uh, he wants a He didn't put these words out there. These are my words. A balls to the wall attacker, Dave. He wants a midfield number 10 who would just lighten it up. And
He wants many attackers, not just the 10.
Yeah, I think it's great that we're gonna have Miguel Almirón here next year. that would be nice.
That brings up the point that for the next U.S. men's national coach, I would love to have Tata go up there so that we can just completely dismantle Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm all for that. They by the way, Atlanta, congrats to them. They're getting a USL team for next year, so good for them.
Hopefully we still have one.
And USL is going to get a team in Memphis in 2019. A lot of USL news. USL, of course, just wrapped up its season last night as we record this on Tuesday night, November 14th. Last night on Monday, the 13th, Louisville City capped off their first ever USL Cup, and they defeated the Swope Park Rangers 1-0 with an 89th minute goal to snap the deadlock. On a field that wasn't in very good shape, but and it was a very hard game to watch at times. Quite honestly, Louisville tried to play directly for much of the game that I didn't see the entire game. Much of what I saw, they tried to play direct. It just didn't look like it was coming off. Both teams played very good defensively, and congratulations to James O'Connor, former Orlando City USL Lion. For coaching that team to a championship, he reached the Eastern Conference Final 2 years in a row, and then he finally took the team that next step. So, congrats to James. It's always nice to see a Lion doing well. And by the way, Dave, here's what's significant about Louisville City winning the title. That franchise used to be the Orlando City USL franchise.
Yes, they were. I was just about to mention that. And still wearing the purple, as we saw, or as anybody who watched it saw. So, while we all are OCB fans in USL, if you got to root for somebody, yeah. Louisville City's not a bad one to choose.
Yeah, should be OCB. But if it's not OCB,
then we'll go Louisville City.
Yeah, I don't know if if the broadcast color was off, if my TV's color was off. Those didn't look purple to me. They look like a dark blue.
Do they?
Yeah,
I don't know. But I don't think they changed anything though, right?
I think they have a couple of different looks. They like when they came here, they had this white and gold kind of hoop pattern jersey that had really no purple on it other than on the crest.
So, yeah, it could be my purple colored glasses.
There you go. Okay. There you go. All right. Works for me. So congratulations to Louisville City. And, that is a team that had championships in its DNA before it ever took the field at Louisville Slugger Field for the first time. And congrats to former podcast correspondent, our ex-Louisville correspondent, Jeff Milby, who is now deeply entrenched in the soccer scene in Louisville. He's got his own radio show. He does stuff with the team. He's he's a man about town, our Jeff Milby.
Nice. You got to love that. And I've been around long enough that I actually remember working with Jeff. So, yeah. Man, I've been around for a while now.
Should have Jeff on when he sobers up and ask him ask him about, the excitement of winning the cup there.
Or better yet, we call him as soon as we get done tonight. I'd get it all on recording while he's not sobered up, because that would be more fun.
I wouldn't do that to him.
That's true. Okay.
Congrats, Milbs. You did good. All right, Dave, speaking of championships, the NASL wrapped up as well this week, Sunday night. The San Francisco Deltas took out the New York Cosmos. 2-0, and that was a game that you would say, well, what does that have to do with anything? Because the NASL might not even exist soon, and if it does, San Francisco Deltas might not exist soon. Well, there is an Orlando City or an Orlando tie to the San Francisco Deltas. Dave, did you know this?
I actually did not know this. Enlighten
All right. me. So. One of the people that was hired as a consultant when San Francisco got up and running was a guy by the name of Ricardo Villar.
Okay.
So Ricardo Villar is the CEO of the Florida Cup right here in Orlando.
Ah.
Yeah. So nice. He was hired by the Deltas in May 2016 as a consultant to help build the team. He helped lay the groundwork for the identity of the team. He also supposedly or reportedly, as the story goes, was very influential in convincing Mark Dos Santos to join this new startup project. And all Mark Dos Santos did was earn NASL Coach of the Year and win the championship for the Deltas.
In their very first year.
Yeah. So there's a quote I've got from our good friend Lenny Santiago, who used to be the PR guy for Orlando City and is now doing a lot of work with the USL. And Mark Dos Santos said that Ricardo Villar flew him into Orlando and presented a clear and ambitious project. Recalled Dos Santos. He convinced me to take on this challenge. Given the adversities faced with a first-year franchise, I am extremely proud of this championship. As you should be, that was a heck of a job coaching. So good job to him, and good job by Ricardo Villar to pitch him on the idea of taking that coaching job.
And of course, you know, congratulations to the the entire Delta organization for you come in year one, you take out one of the oldest and most storied soccer clubs in America,
yeah.
The Cosmos, and do it in a 2-0 match. So, as a fan of soccer, I mean, I hope NASL is still around. I never want any soccer to go away. Now if it evolves or whatever, okay, fine. But I don't want anything to go away. I certainly don't want the Cosmos to go away. I hope that everything can work out somehow. Now, I'm of course being hopeful and naive, and I understand that might not happen, but still, it would be great if the US in general soccer community can figure all this out, because there's a lot of infighting right now.
Just merge and get it over with.
Yeah, just be done with it. Damn it.
All right. So good job by all involved. Congratulations to San Francisco. Congratulations to Louisville. And congratulations to the folks in Orlando who made all of that happen for both of those towns.
That was all us.
We're taking the W on this one. Or W's in this case.
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do. All right, Dave, the U.S. men's national team, a very different-looking U.S. men's national team, took to
very
the field on this very day, took to the field in Portugal to take on the Portuguese, as luck would have it. And
so, wait, the Portuguese were playing for Portugal today?
Yeah, Portugal's national team, let me tell you this, Dave, is made up entirely of Portuguese.
Wow.
Yeah. Not many know that.
Hey, you've heard it here first.
I've blown the lid off this story. And, we sent a bunch of kids, a bunch of them. And some of them did really well, and one or two of them didn't do very well at all. But the U.S. got on the board first. 19-year-old Weston McKennie scored a goal in his first ever cap. And he opened the scoring. U.S. was leading, and U.S. actually was a very fun team to watch for about the first 15, 20 minutes of this game. A nice high press. They were stealing a lot of passes. They were making Portugal very uncomfortable, got some scoring chances, finally cashed one in. And everything looked kind of good. And then out of nothing, this shot that was, I don't even know if it was a shot or a cross, to be honest with you, comes in from outside the box, way out at a tough angle out on the left side, and Ethan Horvath just biffed it hard. It went through his hands, through his legs, and trickled inside the back post to make it 1-1. And as luck would have it, that would be the final score, 1-1 draw in the last game of the year. I will say that the U.S. was probably a little bit unlucky. Tyler Adams had one saved off the line at the last second. Eric Lehigh had a good scoring chance in the second half, and McKennie himself hit the crossbar with a header off of a corner kick. So the U.S. looked pretty dangerous all day on set pieces. I think that for my money, all three center backs that played in the game, I thought played extremely well. Matt Miazga and John Brooks, who only played the first half, and Cameron Carter-Vickers, who played only the second half, I thought all looked really good. I thought that McKennie looked very good, you know, a lot of people will talk about his goal and his hitting the crossbar, but his defensive play was fantastic. Tyler Adams did a lot of good things. Kellen Acosta's service on set pieces was very, very good. CJ Sapong played, the Philadelphia Union striker. He was very active early, and then he just disappeared, Dave.
Yeah.
He just kind of went missing. Juan Agudelo played, did okay, I thought. At times he was very active, and at times he disappeared as well. Horvath was very shaky. I'm trying to think of who else might have stood out. Dom Dwyer did get in the game late, was really not able to get a toehold in the game. He didn't get any service whatsoever after coming on.
He was the fifth sub of the match coming on for Sapong. I mean, he just there wasn't any chances for him to make a statement.
Right. He was active, though. I mean, his first touch was a steal, coming back and anticipating and stealing a ball, stealing a pass. And his second and third touches were each he was able to draw a free kick on both of them. So he was active, and he was trying to make an impact on the game. But there was really a big void in the midfield in terms of service after about the 65th minute or so. Some really good chances for the U.S. in the second half early. And then I thought Lyndon Gooch, as second half sub, played really well. He really kind of shone for me.
Yeah, you know, I think what we can take from this friendly is, you know, this was a hitting the reset button, as we all want it so badly to do after Trinidad and Tobago. So this is, we've got an interim coach, we have a friendly, so it was a time for youth to shine. With a slight mixture of older guys to help stabilize some stuff. And that's exactly what we got. Now, to be fair, this was also essentially a Portugal B squad. I mean, you know, Ronaldo was not there. There was plenty of guys that weren't there. This was not the number one team coming out of Portugal, which is fine.
Yeah, it was a really young team. Even younger than the U.S.'s team, but I mean, it's promising in that those are the Portuguese players that are up and coming through the system. Those are the U.S. players that are going to come up through the system. Josh Sargent picked up a knock in training, wasn't able to play. That's a shame because I was really looking forward to seeing him play.
Yep.
So it gives you hope that things aren't dire for the future of U.S. soccer, really.
No, and they're absolutely not. So, like I said, this was nobody is going to want to see Josie play. Nobody's going to want to see Bradley play. Nobody's going to, you know, certainly nobody's going to want to see Wando play. Of course, none of us wanted to see Wando play for, you know, a couple of years now. But we've got a lot of young players who are up and coming. Because of what happened, we now have the opportunity to say, all right, let's focus on the future, and these guys are the future. Yes, I know people are going to be like, well, Pulisic wasn't there. Okay, yes, well, yeah, but that's not a, you know, he's a given. We set him aside. We know that he's going to be there. This is a chance for other people to figure out who deserves to wear the red, white, and blue. So, and this was just the first, you know, unfortunately, we've got 4 years to figure all this out. But anyway, this was the first game that we get to see some of these guys. And like you said, I mean, you know, if it's our young guys versus their young guys, and we're able to go up against Portugal and come away with a 1-1 and really probably should have come away with a win, man, I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really take anything but positives away. Even the veterans that played are not regular veterans. I mean, How many caps does Juan Agudelo have, or CJ Sapong? Dwyer was, I think, his fourth cap ever.
Right, exactly.
So even some of the older guys, the only ones that you could really say are regulars would be John Brooks who played really well, which, you know, he was coming back from injury and that kind of thing, and maybe DeAndre Yedlin.
Right.
Villafania played a little in the second half. He's kind of been a semi-regular at left back, but left back continues to be the area where this country is searching for that next guy.
Yeah, left back. If we could figure out left back, I almost feel like the rest of the things would just fall in place. It'd be like this little domino that hits and everything's fine.
Well, if you watch the U-17 World Cup, there's some hope on the horizon. I think there's some players that can come up and do that. So I think that there's some players there that we could see in the future that can maybe rescue us from that. But yeah, it's been a little bit of a gap between really top quality fullbacks.
It has. But once again, I mean, I know you read the letter from Christian.
Yep.
And if listeners haven't, go out and find it.
Players Tribune. It's on the Players Tribune.
It's Players Tribune. I think we made it a line link today or yesterday. It's well written by a young man who, you know, we have a lot of respect for. And of course, I do believe he's going to be one of the leaders of the U.S. squad going forward. It should give you hope because he's realistic about everything that he says in it. But it's, you know, and he takes it on his shoulders, which he has pretty much done his entire, you know, career, which, yes, I understand is all of like 3 years, but it's been an amazing career.
Yep. All right. So they're done for the year. That was the final game of 2017. They'll be back. In January, they will play Bosnia and Herzegovina. That was announced earlier today, in fact, I think. Yesterday. It was announced yesterday. So Bosnia is next up, and that will be a game in the StubHub Center out in L.A., or Carson, California, if you want to be more precise. Dave, there's talk about a group of teams that did not make the World Cup for 2018 in Russia, getting together in the good old US of A and knocking the ball around. And we're talking about the United States men's national team. We're talking about potentially Chile, Ghana, Italy. These are some of the teams, Netherlands. These are some of the teams that could come over here and put on a pretty compelling little tournament.
Heck yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, you just mentioned, so the U.S., who has up until now made the World Cup however many in a row, Netherlands, which is usually in there, Italy, which is usually, I mean, you know, we're not in Ghana, which is, we all know what Ghana is to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this, it could be compelling football.
Yeah, it will certainly be fun and something to kind of give us something to look forward to while the World Cup's going on. You could still watch your World Cup games, you know, when they're on, but you can also enjoy the fact that your team and your nation is playing and the teams that you're following are playing because, there's such vast resources in this country. We're so ridiculously blessed to have that, you know, you put a couple sponsors together and your TV's definitely going to step up for something.
Oh, they're
like
going, yeah, they're going to want, because they're missing out on that sweet, sweet World Cup stuff. Yeah. They're going to want to make it up somewhere.
So, you know, whether it's Fox or ESPN, somebody's going to buck up for the games. And, you know, even whether it's just little round robin, not really a tournament, sort of like what the Florida Cup does, or if it's an actual tournament with like knockout games and everything. I think it'd be cool, you know, just get two groups of four and then the top two teams from each group advance to the knockouts. I think that would be kind of a cool little, the first place team in one group plays the second place team, kind of like the Gold Cup, right?
Well, and not only that, but I mean, with the U.S. being that, they're going to fill the stands.
Yeah, and they're going to need places to play like Orlando City Stadium.
If only somebody who is a leader of the U.S. men's national team going forward had said something nice about the Orlando City Stadium.
Yeah. See also Christian Pulisic's Players Tribune article.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's almost like I feel we've mentioned that before.
Said some nice things about Orlando City in there and what the atmosphere was like for him. Unreal, I think, is what he said. Never had experienced anything like it, kind of thing.
In the United States.
In the United States, right.
Sure. I mean, let's be fair.
Dortmund is a crazy atmosphere, for sure. But yeah, for as far as the national team's concerned, it was pretty impressive. And I was there. I was in the stands.
I was about to say, and you, sir, contributed to that.
Yep. He scored
well
a goal.
Done. Well scored done,
a,
sir.
He scored a goal right in front of me. Pretty sure that's why, because I was there. That would be a really cool thing to see, and I've heard people give it some great names. World Cup NIT, has been bandied about. He believes
we can't do that.
the he believes cup.
I like that because that's exactly that's really kind of more what it is. The NIT, that's the National Invitational Tournament.
Yeah.
It's not national.
No,
it's
that's why
it would have to be the IIT.
That's why I like the name so much, because it makes no sense.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Just like having a big tournament while the World Cup's going on.
All right, fair enough. Okay. So NIT simply has to mean something international. It's the not in the what we have to make the NITWC.
I don't know. Cup. Is there a Russian city that we say we're not in? Like, is there one that starts with a T?
There's gotta be. I'm going to have to look that up now. Damn it. Mm.
All right. So let's move on. We got to get through this. People are already losing interest in this show. Before we get out of here, Dave, I want to give everybody a shout out to let them know how they can ask us anything here on the Mainland Podcast. No one did that this month.
It's almost like it's the off season.
I'll say out of mind. Yes, they're doing the football thing right now. They're not really paying attention.
Even podcast stalwart Mark Johnson has not said anything.
Oh, that's the last time I say anything good about Mark. Anyway, yeah, so here's how you can do it. You can ask us anything at the Mainland Podcast by hitting us up on Twitter. At the Mainland is our Twitter, the at symbol, and then the Mainland, all one word, obviously. Main spelled like a lion's mane, M-A-N-E. An indomitable lion, not a lion who would be surrounded by walkers and held down and eaten. I know it was a tiger, but I'm just saying it was still the dumbest moment of this past week's show. Because a tiger that big is not getting overpowered by a dozen walkers. I'm sorry.
I agree with you, but evidently it was true to the comic book.
Yeah, but I bet they pulled it off better in the comic book.
Yes, of course they did.
I bet they pulled off an explanation that made it look.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I was pissed off.
Yeah, I'm kind of hate watching The Walking Dead now. I don't know why I'm going down this rabbit hole. We're already running long, but yeah, there's a couple. This was actually one of the best episodes of the year, but it still had two really ridiculously stupid moves, like a guy who's still in range of a machine gun screaming in anguish over the loss of his people and not getting shot.
Okay, now to counterpoint that, Jerry slicing the zombie in half.
No, he did that to the Savior.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, sorry. You're right. The Savior. Jerry slicing the Savior in half. Awesome.
Hey, if you don't want spoilers for The Walking Dead, go back in time about 2 minutes.
Well, to be fair, you already spoiled the whole thing.
I did. You know what? If somebody hasn't watched it by now, they're not really that big a fan, because how can you wait till the middle of the week?
No, you can't wait till the middle of the week.
All but, right.
Come on.
I apologize if I spoiled it for you, but
Jerry slicing the dude in half was awesome.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Jerry. The best thing was Jerry's line is like, thanks for being such a cool dude.
Yeah, all right. Yes, I know. This is the episode where Jerry became Hurley. Let's move on.
Okay.
So, yes, hit us up at the mainland on Twitter, and use the AskTMLPC hashtag. Hashtag AskTMLPC. Or you can email us at our Gmail account, themainland@gmail.com. Really difficult to remember that one. Again, main, M-A-N-E, not M-A-I-N. I apologize for that entire digression. It was my fault. Anyway, Dave, we got no 5-star reviews to read from iTunes this time out. Our most recent one, very enjoyable, 5-star one from October 4th, is still the most recent one we have. We have 16 ratings, and we're currently sitting on 4.5 stars. With a couple of idiots that gave us 1 star. But I figured that's good. I figure if you're not going to give us 5, then you may as well just give us 1. Don't waffle on this thing.
I'm not so sure that's how that works, but okay. I get what you're getting at. But
either like us or don't, but don't be like, eh.
It's not black or white. Look, people, just go out and rate us honestly. That's all we really care about. Just be honest about it.
Honest is good.
If you're going to rate us a one, why are you listening?
If you love us.
You already know what we're like by this point.
I could see why somebody would love us, and I could see why somebody would hate us.
I can absolutely see why somebody would hate us.
I don't see why anybody would be ambivalent. It would be just you have to like or dislike you. I don't think that we're like a middle of the road take or leave.
No, we're not. We're either a you're right. We are the Cowboys, the Yankees, we are that. You're right. Ugh.
Okay, so Dave, before we get out of here, and boy, is everybody rooting for that at this point. MLS final prediction. The semifinals in the Western Conference, to refresh your memory, Houston and Seattle Sounders.
Okay.
And in the Eastern Conference, it is going to be the Columbus Crew and Toronto FC. Dave, who meets in the MLS Cup final, and who wins MLS?
Okay, so I'm going off a base gut rather than anything else right now, and that is Houston wins in the West, and the Crew win the East, and then the Crew take the crown. Now, here's my reasoning behind that. Houston has been outstanding all year, and so it's actually much more thought out on that side. On the Eastern side, it's all save the Crew. I'm simply going to be completely on board with that, which is so weird for me because I hated them for so long, but I'm on board now. And if I was to listen to my head, I would say Toronto, but I'm not going to do that. Crew find a way to win, and then Houston and Crew meet, and Crew find a way to win again just to make things difficult for the whole move into Austin thing.
All right.
Because so why not?
You've got Columbus over Houston. Do you have a final score?
Oh, 2-1.
All right, you got the Columbus Crew defeating the Houston Dynamo 2-1 in MLS Cup.
Yep.
All right. I am with you in the Eastern Conference, Dave. I see the Columbus Crew getting past Toronto FC, and this is why. Jozy Altidore is suspended for the first leg.
Okay.
Giovinco is suspended for the first leg.
Well, that takes care of the first leg.
The Columbus Crew are playing very, very good soccer right now.
Yes, they are.
I think that Zach Steffen's on his game. I see the team had a big lead in the first leg, and then they just kind of held on for dear life in the second leg against New York City. But I thought that they made an error in not playing Artur in that second game, and maybe that was just to give him – maybe he had taken a knock. Maybe he wasn't 100%. I don't know. But he – has really impressed me down the stretch this season and in the postseason. I think that Artur has been really good, and he and Will Trapp together are really locking teams down. So
yep.
I see Columbus getting past Toronto by virtue of winning that first game and then doing enough in the second leg to hold on and get into the MLS Cup final.
Okay.
In the West, I don't think anyone's playing better than Seattle is right now, and I think the Sounders are going to go back to the MLS Cup final, and as much as I want to save the Crew and rub it in Austin's face, I think Seattle repeats as champions.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a 1-0 Seattle Sounders win in the final. Seattle's been playing phenomenal defense. They have a very underrated goalkeeper in Stefan Fry. And we saw against Toronto last year how he can take over a game. So I like Seattle to win the back-to-back cups.
Well, there you go. You got two very, very different finals. Not completely different finals, but still.
Yeah.
I think we have literally almost all the bases covered except for Toronto.
Yeah, or it's just we don't like them.
Yeah, we really don't.
They really started our slide this year with that game where Orlando City actually played better but did not win the game. And then they went to Houston and lost 4-0, Dave, and I'm still not over that one.
Yeah, so hell with them. They don't get to go to the Cup.
All right, so there you have it. Dave's got Columbus 2-1 over Houston. I've got Seattle 1-0 over Columbus in the final. And we will see. We're probably both incorrect as Toronto beats Houston.
Without a doubt.
Anyway, we'll see how it all goes, and we'll be back in a few weeks to you know, the kind of the good thing here, Dave, is that we're already 1 monthly show into the off season, so we only have December, January, February before we're back to weeklies.
Woo-hoo!
So our next one will be in a few weeks here in December, and then we'll be halfway through the monthly off-season shows.
It's like it's going so fast.
It's almost opening day is what I'm trying to say.
You just have to look at it the right way at the right speed.
Yeah, whatever speed that is. So, yeah, we'll be back next month. We'll probably do a little bit of a Florida Cup preview since that starts in January. Of course, in December, we'll also have some things to discuss, like the MLS expansion draft. We'll have the MLS has a number of mechanisms in December, such as the waiver draft, the reentry draft, stages 1 and 2. And of course, we'll be gearing up. There'll also be a free agency and a half-day trade window in that December timeframe as well. And we'll be gearing up for cool stuff in January, like the NWSL College Draft and the MLS Super Draft. So lots and lots going on for us to talk about. Please get in your questions for Ask the Mainland Podcast. Hashtag AskTMLPC, please. And hit us up on Twitter. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. We are having stuff daily. We've been doing our player season in review ratings. We'll soon be getting into December and doing our top moments of the year for the club. And I've been starting to compile those. And those are going to be exciting, I think, again this year. And, you know, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and keep listening. Subscribe to the Mainland Podcast on iTunes and write us a glowing 5-star review and we will read it right here on the air. So, for David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off for episode number 110, our one and only podcast for the month of November, unless something crazy happens that we need to do a supplemental podcast for. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in December. I will sign off the way I normally do, kind of, by saying, go City, and save the crew.